Serater's Daily Reading, Episode 775, May 1, 2026. Happy May! I'm expecting another exciting month of tech updates and real-world stories of people learning the best ways to do modern work. Buckle up. Let's start with something that hits close to home for anyone building data-backed systems. Arpit Bayani has a piece titled, "Databases Were Not Designed for This." And it's one of those articles that names an intuition you've probably had but never articulated. The core argument is that traditional database architecture rests on a set of unspoken assumptions that agentic AI workloads systematically violate. These assumptions include the caller is deterministic, writes are intentional, connections are brief, failures are loud, and the schema is a contract with engineers who speak the same language. Agents break all of that. They reason their way to queries you've never seen. They hold connections open while they think. They retry in loops. They can write thousands of rows before you get a Slack notification. Bayani's piece is practical and specific. He lays out concrete patterns for defensively designing your data layer. Use statement timeouts at the row level. Soft deletes everywhere an agent can write, with a deleted by column so you know exactly which agent deleted what. Append-only event. Logs for high stakes. Writes with idempotency keys, so retries don't create duplicates. A dedicated connection pool for agent workloads, sized independently from your human-facing traffic. And here's the one that jumped out at me. Role per agent type access, where each agent type gets minimum necessary privileges enforced at the database level, not assumed by the application layer. It's a good read if you're anywhere near production agent deployments. Speaking of agents and tools, Phil Schmidt has a piece on how to correctly use MCP servers with your AI agents, and the framing is useful. MCP servers aren't dead, but blindly enabling them bloats your context, which means higher cost and worse performance. Schmidt lays out two patterns. The first is explicit MCP servers, where you use a mention in the prompt, and the agent resolves, fetches, and injects just those tools for that specific request. Think of it as opt-in. The second is subagent MCP servers, where MCP servers are declared in a subagent's definition and are automatically available at runtime alongside native tools. This is the always-on approach for agents that always need the same tools, like a code reviewer that always needs GitHub access. Schmidt also introduces the allowed tools scoping option, which lets you restrict each agent to just the specific tools it actually needs. Good for least privileged tool access. And then we have lessons on building MCP servers from Rui Carmo, who takes a different angle. He's been building MCP servers for a while, and he writes with the kind of grounded frustration that usually means the lessons are hard won. His central insight is that models don't plan. They look at the conversation, scan the tool list, and grab whatever looks most probable. That's it. So if you want chains that finish somewhere sensible, the server has to make the next call blindingly obvious at every step. Carmo describes several tactics. Use a small set of named core verbs and funnel models toward them through get instructions. Use consistent naming prefixes so that a model that just called office inspect naturally reaches for office patch next. Embed forward breadcrumbs in every tool response. At minimum, a next tools array plus an exact usage string that the model can copy verbatim. Make a discovery tool that returns structured recommendations as data, not prose. And use anchors, not line numbers or byte offsets, because models lose the thread between calls. There's more in the piece, including a checklist for MCP design that he open-sourced. Worth checking out if you're building toolchains. Let's shift to product thinking. Marty Kagan and the SVPG team published a Build to Learn FAQ that answers common questions about the product model. If you haven't read the original Build to Learn versus Build to Earn piece, start there first. This FAQ is the follow-up that addresses pushback and confusion. The piece covers several misunderstandings worth noting. First, the PM is not the decider. Think of a surgical team with multiple specialists, and you defer to whoever is best suited for the particular decision. Second, the PM is not the manager. The product manager is an individual contributor, just like engineers and designers. You are a builder, not a manager. Third, the PM's specific contribution is responsibility for the value and viability of proposed solutions, making sure customers will buy or use the product, and that the solution meets business constraints. The engineers bring deep knowledge of the technology. The designers bring deep knowledge of the users. The PM brings deep knowledge of the customers, the data, the industry, and the business. That's product sense. One more thing on product. Can AI accelerate discovery like it has accelerated delivery? Kagan says yes, but in different ways. In delivery, AI plays an automation and code generation role. In discovery, AI plays more of a prototyping and decision support role. He also notes that developing strong product sense still requires the PM to build judgment over time, and AI can help with that learning. On the lighter side, the Google Testing blog has a quick piece called One Map Key, One Lookup about a common efficiency waste in map usage. The pattern is first checking if a key exists, then looking it up again. That double lookup has a cost, whether it's computing a hash and scanning buckets or performing a log-n and traversal. The fix is to perform the lookup once and reuse the result. Bayani's piece on database patterns earlier had something similar with idempotency keys. The blog covers language-specific idioms, Go's comma o-key idiom, Python's default dict, C++'s operator bracket, Java's compute if absent. Small waste, but you might be doing it in a tight loop, so worth fixing. Now for the ROI piece. Research. Driven engineering leadership has a deep dive on how can engineering leaders calculate the return on their AI investments, drawing on the DORA team's 2026 ROI of AI-assisted software development. Report. There are several findings worth highlighting. First, AI is an amplifier, not a transformer. It magnifies existing strengths of effective teams and existing dysfunctions of struggling ones. Second, adoption follows a J-curve. Most organizations encounter a temporary productivity drop before exponential value, driven by the learning curve, the verification tax from reviewing AI output for hallucinations, and pipeline adaptation as downstream processes scale to higher code volume. Third, individual effectiveness rose the most in DORA's data, but software delivery instability also rose. Friction and burnout did not meaningfully decrease, suggesting that with AI, friction moves rather than disappears. Fourth, productivity gains are highly context-dependent. Research cited shows roughly 35-40% productivity gains on simple greenfield tasks, but 10% or less on complex legacy brownfield code. The piece includes a DORA sample calculator that yields a 39% first-year ROI and an 8-month payback, but only when the value side factors in reinvested headcount capacity offset by an instability, tax, and the cost side